First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. You must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report.
Wow.
I'm taping this on a Wednesday. Yesterday, 11:42 a.m. West Coast time, the earth shook. Earthquake, my first one. And I gotta say, it was effed up. It really was. I didn't know what was going on for like 5 or 6 seconds. I thought aliens were landing. Then you kind of realize what's happening. And it's just weird. It's like you do everything you're not supposed to do. I guess you're supposed to go in a doorway or something. I didn't do that. I ran outside of my house because I was outside writing and my kids were inside. I ran inside to make sure they were okay. So I broke a power line could hit me. As it turned out, it was a benevolent earthquake as far as earthquakes go. It was a 5.4 which is about as high as you can go without like really starting to have some bad things happen. So it was good. It was scary, memorable, and really not that damaging. So I guess as far as quakes go, this was about as good as we could hope for. But I will say, you know, you have all these aftershocks. You get like, they have these little tiny aftershocks that you can't even feel. Like you don't even know they're going on. But your body kind of knows that they're going on. So after a while, like it's kind of like being on a cruise or something where you start to feel sick and a little disoriented and you're not sure why. I was messed up all day yesterday. And in fact, I still don't feel 100% today. And Lord knows I get sick. You know, I get sick. I look for any excuse not to feel good. But in this case, I do feel a little screwed up. Like it was just a really, really weird day. And the other good thing was the way that the local networks cover the earthquake type of things. It's just the anchors on these different, I was watching Channel 4 and the anchors are so serious. And, you know, within 30 minutes, it became pretty clear that nothing bad had happened, but they're like, let's go to live video that happened right as the earthquake was happening. And they'll cut to it. And it's just basically some cameraman in somebody's living room. And you see a light swinging back and forth. And people are going, oh, and they're showing that as their exclusive video. So anyway, it was a crazy day, and it was a crazy day in California, and I cannot imagine being in an earthquake that was, you know, more traumatic than that one, because this was pretty scary. This is a 5.4. I can't even imagine being in a 6.7. I mean, I just think that would be one of the most emotionally scarring things you could go through. But I guess I've been here 6 years, and this is my first earthquake, so that's a pretty good average. I do blame Ricky Davis, though, because, you know, the Clippers signed Ricky Davis, and then 12 hours later, we had a 5.4 earthquake. I don't think that's a coincidence. I don't care. Anyway, we have a good podcast for you today. We got one of the most famous female athletes, if not the most famous female athlete in the universe right now, Danica Patrick. So let's bring her in. Danica Patrick, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks for talking to us after you got robbed at the 2008 ESPYs. I'm glad you're still talking to ESPN.
There's always some pretty good people up for those awards, though.
Yeah, but you presented, so usually that means it's like a wink, wink thing. I don't know. I didn't want there to be any bad blood with you and the worldwide leader.
Goodness, no, no. I'm always taken care of very well, and I always have a good time. I mean, I'd go either way. I've gone when I've not been nominated, and I've gone when I am. So I'm lucky enough to get to host or get to present every year. So it's a good time.
Do you get nervous when you have to make like that 50-foot walk in the high heels?
There is a thought like, geez, don't fall. Please
right.
Don't fall.
I don't think that would be nerve-wracking.
No. I'm not. You mean walking out and presenting?
Yeah, not actually the actual presenting, but just the actual 50-foot walk in the high heels while everybody's applauding, and you're just thinking the whole time, don't step in my dress, don't trip, don't step in my dress.
Oh, well, I wore a short enough one, there's no chance of anyone.
Yeah, that is true.
But I have a good time with it. It's pretty easy. I mean, you know, I get really, you know, I get more fired up about other things than that. That to me is kind of fun, and you know, that's something that I get to do outside of racing. That's kind of cool. So I don't get stressed out.
Anytime I've heard an interview with a race car driver, they always have to mention their sponsors, and they sprinkle it throughout the interview. So I don't know if you wanted to get that out of the way now.
Well, the Motorola car is doing really well this year. You know, we're working hard. And
right. Anybody else?
Anybody
major
else?
Companies?
Yeah. GoDaddy and AirTran and those are the main ones.
All right, good. All right, we're done. We don't have to go back.
Okay.
All right. Now, I think the most interesting thing about where you are at your career right now is that if there's a race on, it's a little bit like golf, where there's a golf match on and people are like, hey, how's Tiger doing? And in race car driving, and there's a bunch of fantastic race car drivers, but with you, it seems like people are always kind of interested to see where you are, what place are you in, are you close to the front, like stuff like that. Do you sense that at all? Do you get resented by the other drivers for that? Like, how does that feel to be in that position?
Gosh, I don't know what it's like from a different position. It's hard for me to put myself in someone else's shoes and you know, try and imagine what they're thinking, you know?
Right.
I mean, all I try and do is the best job that I can with being real with the fans and enjoying it and knowing that, you know, I'm hopefully helping a lot of different people, of course myself, but of course it can go away in a second, so you have to take advantage of these opportunities. And
is that your dog?
That's my dog, yes.
What kind of dog is it?
It's a Maltese. This one's a Maltese that's barking right now.
Did you give it a cool race car name?
Yes, actually this one is one that my sister named. She named him Ricky Bobby after Talladega Nights.
Oh, nice.
So
I figured there'd be some connection. How did you get the bug to start racing?
I was 10 years old. I don't think that I really got the bug. It was my sister, who's 2 years younger than I am, and she was 8 and I was 10, and we always used to go to races on the weekends, and my dad used to race when he was younger, and my sister was like, oh, I want to race go-karts, and somebody in her grade also did it, so we went and looked at their go-karts, and we... it's very exciting around here right now.
Yeah, no, I like it. That's a little excitement to it.
Adds a whole new element. And then we went out to some go-kart races, and we liked it, and I was just like, I don't want to get left out in this whole thing. So
right.
I tried it, and I guess I ended up kind of taking to it.
Did she stick with it, or did she quit?
She ended up quitting. She got bumped around quite a bit in the beginning. You know, she's such a tiny little thing, and she'd be really fast down the straightaways, and then she'd get to the corners, and she'd go slower, and people, like, were driving over the top of her and everything. So I don't think it was necessarily a lot of fun for her.
Mm.
She has other interests.
That would have been an interesting gimmick for you if you had a sister who was also trying to do what you were doing. The Patrick
sisters.
Well,
you know, we could have been like the Williams sisters. Maybe.
Yeah, you could have. And then it would have been a whole thing. Are you tanking races to let your sister win?
Oh, well, I don't know. I would hope that would be a difficult situation.
Yeah, that would be tough. That would be tough. So
yeah.
When did you realize, like, all right, I'm actually good at this. Like, I might be able to do this for a career.
Well, I mean, I would be lying to you if I didn't tell you that, you know, my first year, I was winning races by the end and doing really well. So I thought, you know what? I really like this. I want to go to college for engineering now. I want to learn how to work on my race cars. and then things went much different, than
what do you
that.
Mean much
but,
different?
Well, I moved to England when I was 16 and lived there for a couple of years and, raced cars. I didn't go to college. In fact, I didn't even finish high school the exact normal way. I ended up getting my GED because I went to England and raced. So
wow, I didn't know that.
I kind of went to my own college, if you'd say.
Yeah.
So I definitely had a different upbringing than I expected when I was a little kid.
Did you have like a hero or a role model, like somebody you were aspiring to? Because there really weren't a lot of female race car drivers.
That's probably one of the more unique things. I didn't really have a idol or anything like that when I was a kid. I just didn't, you know. I don't know if I subconsciously knew I was a little different or what, but, you know, I just knew that I wanted to race cars, and I knew that if I was given an opportunity, it could be really exciting and big things could happen. So
what kind of sexist stuff did you deal with? Because you're obviously pretty as a teenager. Like, were people like, hey, what are you doing in this racetrack? Get away from here.
I don't think anybody really knew. I mean, people knew I raced, but they didn't really know, if you know what I mean.
Right.
I mean, you know, every now and again someone would ask about it, but it wasn't probably until I was in like 9th or 10th grade, and MTV came to the school and ABC came to the school, and they were filming me for different projects they were working on that I was in. So at that point, I think people were kind of like, wow, you're on TV?
Mm.
And then probably the next time that they really knew a lot about it was when I made it to IndyCars. So, you know.
Right. Well, in high school, though, like, if you're dating, is this a drawback or a plus? Did this make you, like, more intriguing that you were the girl who raised cars?
I definitely made excuses for myself. I said, you know what, it's probably because I'm intimidating that I don't have a boyfriend.
So you didn't have a boyfriend.
There was other reasons, I don't know.
Right. So you didn't have a boyfriend possibly because they were like, oh, man.
I don't know. What would you think if a girl in school was a race car driver? What would you think of her? Would you want to
see her? I was terrified of talking to any girls in high school anyway, so I would have been like three times as terrified to talk to you, I think. But,
okay, so maybe my theory holds some truth.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you about that because I know you're married now. Like, I even think being married to a race car driver would be weird because when you go to dinner, like, who drives? Do you drive or does he drive?
Well, it depends on whose car we take.
Oh, interesting answer.
Yeah, it's, I don't mind riding. I think in the very beginning with my now husband, of a couple of years, in the very beginning I still kind of am, but I was opinionated about how to drive. There's a really funny story about the first time that we started really dating, and we were leaving, it was at a race, and we were flying somewhere very early in the morning after the race the next day, and it's like 4 a.m. and it's dark out. Mm. And there's barely anybody on the road, but we stop at a red light, and I'm pointing to the open lane at 4 in the morning for him to take it so he can beat the car off the line and not have to follow him.
Right.
So, I mean, yeah.
So he took that personally or no?
Well, I think he just thought it was a little over the top for 4 in the morning that I was trying to take the, you know, open lane at a stoplight so that I, you know, so you could beat him off the line. So I guess I do have my own opinion on the road. I do. What can I say? It's my job, you know?
Yeah, but I see, I'm of the opinion that backseat driving is a trait that females have taken to another level. I know my wife is one of the all-time great.
What does she do to you?
Well, no, she just, oh, sure, well, why didn't you go in that lane? Why don't you do this? Are you going to hurry up? Like, stuff like that. And I feel like now you have the backseat driving gene, but also you're a great driver. So, I would be intimidated if we dated. Like, I would have a complex because I felt like, I would always feel like you were judging me as I was driving, that I wasn't going in the right lane, that I wasn't doing that. You would be a little secret, right? Would that
no,
be ever
we're
like
all
just
good at different things.
Right.
You know, there are things that my husband is far better at than me, so, and we kind of know what they are, but, yeah. Hmm. So, anyways, when I was in high school, that being a race car driver was my excuse for no boyfriends.
That's a pretty good excuse.
Thanks.
So when did you, I guess you can turn pro at different levels of being a pro, but when did you become the pro at the highest level?
Well, I mean, there's different levels of it. I mean, I guess I would describe turning pro as being probably when you start to get paid.
Yeah.
I started to earn a living from racing when I was about 19. And then, obviously, I got to IndyCar when I was 21 or 2. I think
so it was like 4 years
22.
Ago? Yeah, four
yeah.
years ago.
Yep.
And you're the fourth woman ever to race at Indy 500.
That's right.
The most nervous you've ever been?
Racing that for the first time?
Yeah.
Gosh. Yeah, I was pretty nervous. Anytime I'm doing well, I mean, my first Indy, I qualified fourth and in a 33-car field, so that was pretty good, and I definitely wanted to put on, you know, put on a good show, and the further up I start, the more nervous I get because I feel like there's more to lose, you know?
Yeah.
You're starting mid-pack or the back or something for some reason, you've got nothing to lose, you go for it, and, you know, really there's not much to do but move forward. And
when I'm starting further ahead, I get nervous. When you battle nerves, though, in driving, it's a little different than being nervous for a basketball game. Like, if you go out in a basketball game and you're nervous, you miss a couple shots and you settle down, you're fine. When you're driving professionally at 200 miles an hour, you can't really afford to be nervous the first couple laps. So do you, like, consciously scale back? Like, how do you handle that?
Yeah, I think that it's true, but for some reason when the car starts and, you know, you get rolling, you're a little preoccupied, you know. You're saving fuel, you're, you know, picking the right gear to start in, you're, you know, warming your brakes up, warming your tires up. So you don't really you're not really focusing on being nervous and what's about to happen. So fortunately enough, I guess it's a pretty good system. I stop getting nervous when we start rolling. So
how much does concentration have to do with being successful? Because it just seems like to concentrate at that level for 3 hours would be a unique skill in itself, right?
Yeah, I think that it was the most obvious to me when I was young and in go-karts, and you'd take your mind off of it for a split second. Like, you know, you're young, you look out into the crowd maybe or something like that, and, you know, driving your go-kart, and all of a sudden you make a mistake. And so you really need to have a very tight attention span, and you need to be able to keep your focus on one thing for obviously an extended period of time. So, letting your mind wander is not necessarily the best thing to do. So, yeah, it's pretty easy to make mistakes.
Well, so if you had to break it down, hand-eye coordination, concentration, and then you'd have to have a certain level of fearlessness, right, to do this at a high level?
Probably.
I mean, those would be the three biggest
things. I think that we're all fearful of, I'm fearful of the most simple things, but not necessarily of driving a race car. I mean, I'm scared of the dark.
Right.
I'm scared of dark waters. I'm scared of bugs, heights. But I'm not scared of driving like 240 miles an hour. So, you know, we're all scared of different things.
When you first started hitting that mainstream circuit in 2005, how much of a backlash was there? And when do you think you overcame that and people finally said, you know what, she's good?
Probably one of those things that everyone has their own opinion and everybody either believed or never believed at any certain time. You know, that's something that is, I don't have the answer to. And I think that's, you know, something you have to ask them. And
so it wasn't a tipping point for you.
What's that?
So there wasn't a tipping point where you were like, all right, I'm accepted now. Or was it when you won the race this year?
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I think that at the point that I won in Japan this year was that, you know, if people had faith in me, they were going to have it before then.
Yeah.
You know, they were going to think that I could drive before then. So I really think that everybody has their own opinion on it. I really do. And I don't think very many of them are similar either, probably. You know, each driver or each team or whatever or each fan, you know, has their individual either reactions to things that I do, or they meet me, or they have an experience, or they drive next to me or something. So, you know, I think that they're all probably different.
Now, when you started crossing over in the mainstream and you're doing some magazine stuff, some talk show stuff, like, were you careful about how much you did of that stuff to not do, you know, go the Anna Kournikova route where people didn't even think of you as a driver?
Well, I've definitely always felt very comfortable with all the different things that I've done. You know, if I didn't feel comfortable, I just wouldn't do it no matter what, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I felt comfortable with everything I've done, but I think more in the beginning, you know, you take more of the opportunities, than you do later on when there are just more to pick from. I'm definitely very selective at this point. I'm very conscious of of my fan base, of perception, of my sponsors, of everything. You know, there are so many more things to weigh in on my decisions than there was back in the days when I didn't really have many sponsors and, you know, it was just me and my family making a decision. So
right.
Things evolve and change as your career grows.
Well, there's been, it seems like a little bit of a backlash against you this year after you won, you were in Sports Illustrated, then you got involved in a couple of, well, I thought they seemed like minor confrontations that seemed like they would happen with any driver, but for some reason, because it was you, you took some heat, and then the people are saying she's a prima donna, all that stuff. Like, do you think that's even remotely fair that you're not allowed to act like any other driver?
I believe that, you know, in this world of media and publicity and, you know, growing fan bases and everything, that, you know, rules change a little bit, and, you know, people are always watching, and I think that's something for me that I always have to keep in mind, is that the longer and the further I go in my career, the more people are watching, and, you know, I wouldn't change it for the world, but it's definitely something in my position that I have to keep in mind, so.
Well, you've become a celebrity in a really bad era to be a celebrity, because you have YouTube and Google.
Or good.
Well, good, but there's a lot of things that are going on now that just aren't good, like especially any sort of moment you could have that might not be pleasant is going to immediately go on YouTube. You got all these people posting photos of you. Like, I'm sure you probably aren't a big fan of Googling yourself. Like, do you just ignore that stuff?
Yeah, I don't really. I mean, I can't, there's nothing I can do about what people say about me. I can just live my life the way that I believe I should, try and do the right things, and then beyond that, it's out of my control. I think
that's
that we're definitely in a bit of a world of attention that, media attention that is not always necessarily positive, and in fact, there's quite a bit of negative, and I can't control that. I can't control that, and I can't control, you know, I think even sometimes, you know, you do an interview and people have their own motives for the piece that they want to do, and no matter what you say, sometimes you can't win. So, you know, you can just, all I do is just try and stay true to myself, try and be real, try and be myself, and feel comfortable in everything that I do, and if I can do that and I can walk away and feel like that, then beyond that, there's just nothing I can do.
That's good. Let that crap bounce off you. The dumbest thing I've heard or read about you is that some people think that it's an advantage that you're tiny. You're 5'2", you weigh like a little over 100 pounds, and you're going against these guys that maybe are 60, 70 pounds heavier. But these are have to be heavy race cars, right? I just can't believe that would actually
about
be an advantage.
1,600 pounds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, really, that's an advantage? I don't see that one.
Well, I mean, there's definitely pluses and minuses to everything. You know, if you're small, yes, you weigh less. Do teams try and make an effort to make sure the car is as light as possible? Yes, they do.
Mm.
But then what about the strength factor? You know, I'm by no means built like a 6-foot guy.
Right.
So, you know, there's trade-offs to everything. So, man, you know, it's you just deal with those things that come along, and you know, I guess I can just be happy that I've had some, you know, had some good races this year. Won my first race in spite of all of the different things that have happened and those kinds of rules. And you know what? At the end of the day, when it all comes down to racing and going out and making good pit stops, passing cars, it really doesn't matter. It really comes down to: is your car good? Are you having a good day? Are you moving forward? And are you on your game or not? That's really all that matters on race day.
Well, I'll tell you where it does matter is go-kart racing. Because Leanne Tweeden wins every celebrity race ever because she weighs like, you know, 125 pounds.
Maybe she's just really good.
No way. And so with the go-karts, it does factor in, you have to admit.
There, you know, to ignore the fact that there is obviously something there is, like I said, it's true. There's something there. But when it really comes down to it in the race, and proportionate to your vehicle. So yes, at 1,600 pounds, and then you add a, you know, driver in there, the percentage is so much smaller than in a go-kart when the go-kart weighs, you know, maybe 200 pounds or so, and then you put yourself in it.
I had one of my,
obviously a bigger percentage, so.
One of my friends was in a race in 2005, Adam Carolla, and Leanne Tweeden beat him. and you could see her car pulling away from him on the straightaways. So
yeah.
we made fun of him the whole night that Leanne tweeted and beat him. And he, I mean, I think he's still complaining about the weight difference.
I bet he took it well, though. He seems like the kind of guy that would take it well.
Oh, no, he took it terribly. Hey, in fact,
really?
If you brought it up, if you ever see him and you bring it up to him, he'll go on a 20-minute rant about how Leanne tweeted and
go-karts.
Oh, well,
if I do a show again, I'll have to...
yes, bring that up.
Bring up, have you ever raced before?
Yeah, say that Leanne Tweeden was bragging the other day about how she just repeatedly beat Corolla. He'll flip out. I have an idea. I have an idea how to handle the slight backlash against you right now.
Okay.
Which is a predictable and understandable backlash because that's the way society works. We build people up and then we look at little stupid things to nitpick at them. Now, Tiger won the U.S. Open and got all this publicity because he won it with torn knee ligaments and, oh, my God, what courage he has, what guts, all that stuff. I think you have to say that you have a stress fracture in your right foot and you're going to grit through it for the next 6 months. I think that immediately swings people and you're a hero. What do you think?
I like it.
There's no way to
prove
it.
I'm going to run that by my team, my publicist, and see what they think.
Yeah, because there's no way to prove... Like, stress fracture is one of those things where sometimes it doesn't show up in an x-ray, so nobody could really discount it.
Although the only problem is that if people listen to this podcast, they're going to know.
Mm. So. I didn't think of that part. I should have told that to you privately. But don't discount faking some sort
Maybe
of injury or illness.
Maybe I'll have a stress fracture in my other foot or my right hand or something.
Yeah, or a sprained wrist.
Some other body part.
Sprained wrist would be good. So we're very
I'll
close.
I'll definitely take that into consideration.
Take it into consideration. A couple more questions. We're like about 6 months away from somebody maybe putting together a bad TV movie about you. I think it could happen. I don't know if enough's happened in your career that we could have like the blowout. You know, because you're only, what are you, 26?
I'm 26. Yeah.
Yeah, there's not enough. You don't have the broad, like, you know, when you're 40, I think that's when, like, you'd have the movie where, like, the Meryl Streep type actress would play you, like, the whole career thing. Right now, you're, like, in that quickie TV movie stage where, like, ESPN throws something together, kind of like when they did 3. So who plays you in the movie?
Even though this shouldn't happen, who's going to play me?
Yeah, well,
now
if it happens, you
years.
Can't control it. You can't
now
control
it, 20 years.
No, right now.
Right
you
now.
You can't control
right.
it.
We don't know who's going to be around in 20 years. In 20
right.
years, they're just being born right now.
Right. So who plays you in the TV movie right now?
Let's see. I have always said Miss Jolie because
oh, that'd be
I'm
good.
An action figure lady.
I like that. You're aiming high.
But, yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Let's see. Who else? I mean, basically, just think of some... tough chick with long dark hair or a long blonde hair. They can dye it.
So worst case scenario for you is one of the Olsen twins.
Their hair is not long enough. Extensions are possible though.
Well, the extensions, you could do everything.
I think I would just be flattered if anybody wanted to, take part in a movie about me. Of course, every now and again, you know, I get that reminder and I feel like it really happens at the ESPYs the most where I feel like, I am just Danica from Roscoe, Illinois, and these people don't know who I am at all.
Well, you know what would be, if there was a movie, the good part would be the part with you and your sister growing up and entering these go-karts. Like, that would actually be interesting. I would enjoy that. And then I guess
maybe then the Olsen twins would work.
Oh,
interesting. Because they're sisters, and me and my sister look alike. She has short blonde hair, and I have long brown hair.
Interesting.
Which is all possible in hair and makeup.
The scary thing is some Hollywood executive is writing this down, like, call Olsen twins, get get writer. All right, last thing. I mean, I'm sure your husband's a great guy. I'm sure you have no regrets, but I think you made one crucial mistake. I think you should have married an Andretti. And I don't care which Andretti it was, but just for the name, I think that would have pushed you to another level.
It's like a pretty cool name, isn't it?
It's Danica Andretti. I feel like you'd be unstoppable. Maybe you just change it.
Well...
is that legal? Could
Maybe
you just change your name?
Maybe I can temporarily take it on while I drive for Andretti Green.
That's pretty good. Danica Andretti, I feel like you would just be ripping off Indy 500 wins.
Well, that was the problem. You know, that was one of the things is that the Andretti's have had a – Mike led so many Indy 500s and he didn't win any. That was the big hang-up, but he deserves a lot of them.
So what's your next big race coming up, next big thing you're preparing for?
Well, you know, I'm on a bit of a lull right now, thank goodness. We were on the road for 6 weeks straight, which is really tough on all of us, but definitely all the crew guys that are, you know, in the shop all day and then on the road and, you know, away from their families. At least I get to go with my family all the time.
Mm.
So we get a week off, and then we're going to Kentucky. We've got four left. We've got Kentucky, Sonoma, Detroit, and Chicago.
And then what happens?
And then we get a little break, and I believe we're supposed to go to Surfers Paradise in Australia then in October. So we've got, well, with the merger between IndyCar and Champ Car, there's been some different schedule, just some schedule changes from last year. That's all right. It's all good fun. Lots more competition this year, definitely. There's so many good drivers in the IndyCar series now. They've made it really tough.
It sounds like it. It sounds like it's even hard to keep track of like who the best people are. It seems like everybody's just good.
When they're all that good, it's like who's having a good weekend, who dials their car in quicker, you know, who catches a break, who makes it in, who qualifies further up in qualifying.
Right.
You know, who catches the yellows at the right time. I mean, there's just so many elements that come into it. When you have a lot of good drivers, it makes it all the more difficult. And I've definitely noticed it this year for sure. But it's good for the series, you know. The more competition, the better it is for you guys watching, right?
Yeah, that's true. I forgot to ask you one question. Do you think cars could go any faster? I feel like we've maxed out. I don't see how we could go any faster.
We could go faster. We went faster 5 or 8 or 10 years ago than we do now.
Well, what's the fastest that you've gone?
The fastest I've gone is probably about 240.
So you're saying we could get to 250 in the next 10 years?
Well, the thing is they keep dialing us back. You know, I mean, at a certain point in time, the speed, you know, the whole speed kills thing?
Right.
At a certain point in time, there's just too much of it.
Yeah.
So especially turning corners with concrete walls all around you, it's... It definitely makes for some interesting racing, and dangerous. So we'll probably hover around, you know, Indy's our fastest track. We do about 230 average in qualifying, and so we'll probably stay right around there. I think it was Leyendijk maybe did 242 or something like that average.
Oh my God.
I don't remember what year it was, maybe around 10 years ago-ish. They keep us under control.
Well, I've done 116 in the Mirror Parkway.
The last time I did 116 out on the public road was a very long time ago.
I felt like I had to brag because you've been talking about, you know, you're driving and all this stuff, and now I'm starting to get competitive with you.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
I'm kind of retired, though, although I did make it from Vegas to L.A. in 3.5 hours last year. But see, that's the thing.
Impressive.
It's you brag about driving fast, and it's actually not a good thing to brag about because it's dangerous. So I don't want to seem like a brag.
I don't drive fast on the road at all.
Good.
I will say that I accelerate from a line very quickly up to the speed limit, or around that. But I don't drive too out of control. When there's somebody cruising down the highway that wants to go faster than me, trust me, I let them by. I'm like thinking, you're my cop catcher. I'll just go a couple miles an hour slower right behind you.
I would think that nobody could get out of a speeding ticket better than you because you have the looks and you have the celebrity, and there's just no way any cop is going to give Danica Patrick a speeding ticket.
I've been pretty lucky over the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
I did get a ticket earlier this year in Arizona.
How fast were you going?
The cop, I was doing 17 over the limit.
Ooh.
So at least it was respectable anyway if I'm going to get a ticket. And the cop told me that he said, I don't know who you are and I don't care who you are, because I tried to tell him I'm a race car driver at the very end, because you can't just say right up front, hey, you know,
right, you batted your eyelashes,
you off or they're not, you know.
Yeah.
So he came back up to the window and I said, please, I'm a race car driver, I'm not going to hurt anyone, I know what I'm doing, I'm sorry I was speeding. He said, I don't know who you are and I don't care who you are. And then lo and behold, that night it was on TV. So I'm guessing he might have known who I was.
Yeah, I think he wanted the story for his friends.
Yeah, well, you know, I guess I was the one speeding, so when you leave the door open like that.
I'm surprised you didn't have to publicly apologize like something completely horrible just
Well, I guess in my job, in my profession, beating, I wouldn't go so far as to say it's acceptable, but it's predictable.
Yeah. All right, I'll let you go. Thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it. Good luck dealing with everything, and good luck with the last four races.
Thank you.
All right, take care.
Bye.
All right, last week we had some controversy. I mentioned that one of my ESPN coworkers, Connor Schell, in content development, made the executive decision that it's just not fun when I have my podcast, when I have my friends on my podcast, and a lot of angry emails telling Connor to go stick it. So what I thought we'd do is I thought we'd sneak attack him at work. I think he's in his office right now. His assistant just told me that he was, so let's sneak attack him.
Connor Schell's office.
Hey, it's Bill. I'm calling for Connor.
Hey, Bill. Hold on 1 second.
All right.
Hey.
Hey, what's happening?
How are you?
You're on the podcast.
What do you mean?
I mean, we're doing the podcast right now, and we called you because you know what? You're America's number one villain right now. You don't think I should have my friends on my podcast, so you're going to have to explain yourself right now.
Bill, you're absolutely not allowed to do that.
Come on.
You know that.
Come on, give me an explanation. Why shouldn't I have my friends on? What bothers you about it?
You've completely taken me out of context here, Bill.
Well, what was the exact quote?
And I don't like you ganging up on me.
Not only did I gang up on you, but your
millions of your listeners are ganging up on me as well.
Your beloved coworkers implored me to call you. Namely, two of the people in your office. Even, like, making sure you were in the office at the perfect time. Because you know what? Even they want you to explain yourself.
My exact quote was that I told you there was one podcast that I didn't like, and you've taken that into...
No.
Now I don't like anything you've ever done with any of your friends.
No, your exact quote was, I like when you have people that I know on your podcast, I don't care what your friends have to say. That was the exact quote.
I don't think that was an exact quote.
It was pretty close to being an exact quote. There are witnesses. Witnesses.
Who's our witness? Carrie?
Yeah, my wife.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So... Are you going to back down from this? Because America wants to know.
All right, I'm willing to back down, Bill. You win. I was overwhelmed by the response you got in email.
I mean, I sent
tens of emails. I see clearly that I was wrong.
I sent you at least 12 emails.
There are at least 11 people out there.
And you know what's funny?
One of them was definitely from Jacko, though.
You know what's funny was a lot of people were blaming you for any of the ills with ESPN broadcasting right now, like you were... You were to blame for every bad decision we ever made.
They practically wanted to blame me for killing Kennedy.
All right, so here's your chance right now to apologize to everybody who listens to the podcast.
I want to apologize specifically to Jacko.
Thank you. I think he'll appreciate that. Yeah. You know what? I have to go because I have to call my buddy J-Bug at work to find out what's happening with Manny Ramirez.
Perfect.
I'm sure you won't listen to that part.
Hopefully it can be at least 120 minutes long, though.
Okay, good. All right. Thank you for talking.
People are looking forward to 2 hours with Rob Stone.
Wow. Digs until the bitter end. This is terrible. All right. We're letting you go.
Bye.
All right. In Connor's honor, we're going to call my buddy J-Bug. The trading deadline is Thursday. We're making this phone call on Wednesday. But a lot of talk about Manny Ramirez back home, whether he should go, whether he should stay. And I feel like that J-Bug and I are two of the only people who don't want him to get traded. So let's give him a ring.
This is Jason Buggy.
Bug.
Billy.
What's happening?
How's it going?
You're on the podcast.
I'm on the podcast.
I wasn't sure if you're going to be there because midday is the time of the day when the bug tends to disappear into stall number two for about 20 minutes.
You've got me by 13 minutes, 3 o'clock. So regular, I'm a regular.
I had to call you because you and I... And I'm sure there's a couple others out there. I haven't been on the internet. But I feel like you and I are the only two people who would be extremely bothered that they would trade Manny Ramirez for like 50 cents on the dollar. I don't get it.
Well, I think about the lineup when he wasn't there Friday night.
Right.
Wasn't potent. You know, not even a little bit. So I'd be a little bit bummed out if we didn't get something really fantastic in return, and I'm not talking about prospects.
Isn't this part of the Manny experience, though? That's what I don't get, is like when we spent $160 million on this guy, we knew that there would be, you know, once every season or every two seasons, he was going to have these weird episodes, and you just ride him out. He's crazy.
He's completely insane. He's a child. He's a child. He might be the youngest of 15 brothers, because that's how he acts. I mean,
right.
What are you going to do? The guy's played more games, I think, than maybe Pedroia is the only guy that's played more games this year for the Sox.
I know.
They go back. I don't know. It's got to be out there somewhere, but who's played more games than this year? He's taken a couple games off against some questionable pitchers that
Gannon
pointed out today, but, you know, this is what he does.
You know what, though? God bless Gammons, but he's pretty tight with the Red Sox front office, first of all. So, you know, I feel like it's tough to feel like he's being objective about this. But the bigger issue is you can't play the whole professionalism card with Manny, and he doesn't handle himself well, and blah, blah, blah. And meanwhile, Theo Epstein, what happened with him 3 years ago, was just as unprofessional as anything Manny ever did. The guy basically walked away from the team.
In a gorilla suit.
In a gorilla suit. and now this guy's laying down like the wood, you know, laying down the wood on what it's like to act like a Red Sox. It's like, you ditched us. You quit. You left us without a general manager going into the off season. I don't see how that's any different. And I think anybody who writes about Manny and takes the Theo Lucchino side without mentioning that Theo ditched the team 3 years ago is a hypocrite.
And lost our best, one of my favorite player, not on the Red Sox in the meantime, in Hanley Ramirez. We got Beckett and Lowell in return. Sure, that's great, but boy.
What a trade that was.
That was a great
trade.
That
was really one of the most amazing. You know, I was reading some magazine they interviewed 20 or 25 GMs. Who would you start a baseball team with? And like Hanley Ramirez was the overwhelming. This is the guy I'd start the team with. And then I'm thinking like, all right, this feels like it should be a bad trade, but we won the World Series with Beckett, which is the whole point of making the trade. And Lowell was like the flyer that turned out great. And
got resigned.
I don't know.
Yeah, it worked for both teams.
But if Lowell had been a bust, which really was like a 50-50 thing. Maybe not as good of a trade, even if we win the World Series. I don't know. The whole point's to win the World Series.
And Beckett seems to have that every. Yeah, but you know what? We'd won the World Series. I was good for a couple of years.
You're playing that card then.
I was good for a couple of years. I love Hanley Ramirez. Love the guy. He's my keeper. Yeah, I love him. I love Hanley Ramirez. But you know what? It's a trade that worked out for both teams.
Well, is there anybody you would rather start a must-win, do-or-die game in the playoffs with than Beckett? Is there anybody in either league that you would rather have?
No one jumps out at me.
Yeah, I would say no. I'd say it has to be Beckett.
Yeah, he's kind of intense. Now, Chamberlain on Friday night really scared the hell out of me because I'm thinking this is what we have to look forward to for the next 10 years.
He was incredible.
Yeah.
That was an amazing pitching performance. Lackey was, you know, Lackey had the no-hitter going in the ninth last night. I never felt like he was dominant like Jabba was.
Yeah, he had four strikeouts.
Yeah. Jabba, our guys actually seemed afraid of him. And in one case, Manny was so afraid that he decided not even to play.
He's a little, that Jabba's a little loose. He's kind of, you remind me a little bit of Clemens, and the younger, you know, big dude, a little bit scary, might hit you in the head. You think about it.
A little crazy. Looks like he'll get in a bar fight or two before everything's said and done.
Probably has.
I have to say, this is the, I don't want to use the word that's the synonym for, the nickname for a cat. So I'll say wuss. But this Red Sox team is very wussy. The Tampa brawl I thought was eye-opening because he had six guys basically pigpiling Crisp and beating the living crap out of him. Like, where was our, like, crazy bench-clearing brawl guy? Like, now with Ortiz out of the lineup, I feel like I don't even know do we have one guy who's going to stick up for everybody?
He's actually, that crazy guy is actually DHing and playing first place for the last place Baltimore Orioles.
Millar?
Yeah. Yeah, he wouldn't have let that happen. He would have been out there, and then everyone would have followed because it's like, crap, Millar.
Wait, well, Trout wouldn't let that happen either.
Maybe not. No, Trout definitely not. That's different. He's done, right? He's stick a fork in him.
I feel, but I'm just saying, like, in the old days being 3-4 years from now, I did feel like we intimidated the Yankees a little bit. Yeah, we threw a Jeter every time. And, you know, it was kind of like, well, what are you guys going to do about it? And they never fought back. And even though it's a very tiny thing, I felt like it was kind of symbolic of what was going on in the rivalry. And now you have Jabba just, you know, throwing it at Euclid. Every start he has against the Red Sox, he throws at Euclid. And none of our guys really responded. And I don't know who would respond. I mean, it's like...
including you, other than looking out there and saying, what the...
Yeah.
Because he knows if he goes out there, he's going out there solo. Look what happened to Coco. I don't want to get my head beat in.
I have to say, here's the move I think Uke should have done, and Trot did it once. I forget the pitcher, but don't you let the bat go in the next swing?
Possibly. Something. But not if you're going to get... If you have no backup, you're not...
Yeah, that might have been true. I really wonder if that was going through Uke's mind. All right, if I go out there, like, I know Manny's not going to get my back. Ortiz is nowhere to be seen. I got Ellsbury, Chris, Pedroia.
Pedroia could take out a couple ankles.
Yeah, Pedroia at least would, like, he'd dish out a few punches and probably take 10, but I think at least he'd give a crap.
All 5, 6 of them.
Mike Lowell is like Gandhi. Like, Mike Lowell's not going to come in and start throwing punches.
Maybe not, no.
So anyway, with this traded deadline coming up, I really think that we need a hothead. We need somebody. We need, like, a righty DH who's, like, 6'5", who's been suspended a couple times in the minor leagues for throwing a bat at somebody. And that's what I want in this team. Even if it was somebody like Daniel Cabrera on the Orioles, who's
not
just
gonna
insane.
Happen. No.
You don't think we can get one crazy guy?
No, nope. Not going to happen.
This Red Sox team is soft to me. I don't think they have it. I don't mean to overreact, but it just seems like, you know, we're down in the ninth. I don't feel like we can come back. Teams throw at us. We don't throw back.
We had the same exact conversation 2 or 3 years ago.
The 2006 team.
Yep.
Yeah.
We had this identical conversation. We went to the Clement game, too. We went to a game where it was game 3 against the in the playoffs. They got swept.
Oh, in 05 against the White Sox.
It was 05.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah, soft.
The 05, 06 teams were a little soft.
They were a little bit soft, a little bit ginger.
The Orioles stink. What would be terrible about bringing Millar back as a rated DH?
Nothing other than, you know, he'd be riding the pine. We have a DH. He's a lefty.
No, I'm saying he could be, you know, your righty. Okay, gets bats against lefties every once in a while.
Oh, throw him in the outfield, throw him at first, Yeah, you could do that with
plays twice a week.
He'd love to come back here.
Oh, he'd kill himself.
He wouldn't even have to trade Manny after that. He's the only guy that could keep Manny in line.
I'm just so bummed out by this Manny thing. First of all, I love watching the guy.
They're not trading him. They're not.
I don't think they are either.
They can't. They're not. They won't. The guy's going to end up 300. He's going to bat 300, 305. He's going to hit 30 to 35 homers, like you said. He's going to – they're not. Not going to happen.
I don't see how you trade a guy who's still productive when your offense is a little sketchy.
No. It's not going to happen. Can't. Not where – you know, what are we – we're a game behind.
Do you realize that the last time Jacoby Ellsbury hit the ball out of the infield was during the Eastern Conference semifinals, Celtics?
Is that true?
No, I made that up.
No, I believe it though.
Is it a bad sign when he comes up when it's like softball? The outfielders move in.
Yeah, but it was
the left field and the right fielder. They come in 50 feet. That's bad, right?
But you even bringing that up is just a perfect getting back to Manny. It's perfect. Look what happened. He, you know, Manny sat out. He went to the top. They were ready to switch things up. They were ready to change the order. Manny sat out.
I will say,
first we didn't score a run. It was an out at the top of the inning, the top of the order.
Right.
Go ahead. Sorry. I'm going to lose my mind.
Well, I will say that the Ortiz thing has been underrated because he's one of those guys that he'll win 3 games a month for you by himself just by hitting the crap out of the ball. But then he'll extend a couple leads that you have in a couple other games where you're up. And Wakefield's lost a bunch of these this year. You'll be up 4-2 in the 7th inning, and Ortiz will come up and hit a 3-run homer, and the game's over.
And that's it.
And we've let these teams crawl back in the 6th, 7th, 8th innings. I still use we like I'm on the team.
Yeah.
Because we have these bad relievers, and then we're also not extending these leads because we don't have that finishing hitter who puts the game away. So I have to say, the only real bright spot for me for this entire season has been Lester. I love watching him pitch. I just think the guy just showed so much guts coming back, you know, especially when he didn't win the ESPY. You know, God forbid he won the best comeback ESPY. But he's been great, and to think that we could have given him up in the Santana trade is kind of chilling.
Well, you got to throw Pedroia in there too because he's just
he
doesn't quit. There's a guy.
But I mean, he did this last year. I feel like he's doing this year what he did last year.
Right.
Same
right.
For
which is a nice surprise, by the way.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
But the big thing that stands out to me so far about this year in a positive way is that Lester has turned into this. I mean, he's on pace for 240 innings.
Yeah,
he's turned into a horse, and I think Beckett will heat up as he goes along. Dice is a roller coaster ride with deceiving stats.
What's nice about Lester is we're seeing a side of him where, you know, I hadn't seen it, maybe because he was the young guy on the team, but it doesn't seem like he likes to lose.
No.
Which, you know, he's like, hey, Lester's a little intense. Didn't know that about him.
Well, that's why I didn't want to trade him because, you know, I know we had a 3-0 lead in the World Series, but you're on the road in Colorado and the team needs you to go at least 5-6 innings and you do it and you end up getting the win. Like, that says a little something about you. Whereas Buckholz is in that Coco Crisp Ellsbury. I just feel like he's going to completely fold if there's any pressure at all. I don't trust him.
I told you. I said it once. I'll say it again. He reminds me of Boo Radley, the young Robert Duvall. He's a little bit too pale and creepy looking for me, to be quite honest.
Well, I've been pushing for him to grow Fu Manchu for like 2 years.
I mean, you've got to do something, man.
At the very least, if you can't grow it, you've got to get like a Fu Manchu toupee or something. But he's been awful since he threw the no-hitter. His stats are terrible.
Really bad. Really bad. Yeah, it's against the Orioles, too. So, I mean.
You know what else isn't helping? Hideki Okajima.
Yeah, they were talking about that on the radio the other day. Man, they were talking about
that last year.
Yeah, and he sits far away from the other fellas. And, you know, I don't know if it's a language barrier or he doesn't want to be a part of the crew, but he doesn't look right.
So
he did all right. He did okay last night, so.
So we don't feel good about our prospects?
Not really, no. I mean, I don't feel, because it's, you know, in years past, it's always the cream always rises, right? So you always had the Sox and the Yankees, but this year, Tampa Bay is, they're not going anywhere.
Yeah, I'm not sold on them.
Nah, they're not going anywhere. They're not going to win.
I think they fold. Anaheim is the team that scares me now because.
Oh, God, they own us.
Well, but we own them in the postseason, but the Teixeira trade was ridiculous. I don't understand how baseball works where you can basically trade Casey Kochman, who's fine, who's not like one of the top, you know, he's okay. He might hit 300 with 15 homers, and they give up some reliever I'd never even heard of. And they get 2 months of Tex, and then when he leaves as a free agent, they get 2 first-round picks. Like, what kind of trade is that?
And he's not going to leave as a free agent.
But even if he does, you're protected. Like, in the NBA, this would be the equivalent of trading like some mid-level point guard for 2 months of Baron Davis and 2 first-round picks.
Oh, it's a beautiful. I think it's great because we're usually the ones that are we're picking up some first-round picks in times of what are we? We got Ellsbury, we got Pedroia. I mean, think of some of the guys that we picked up from those same types of things that happened to us.
Well, it did make me mad that we didn't get Marte from Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
we didn't need Nady, but the guys that the Yankee gave up. I'm in this crazy American League fantasy league that where, you know, we have to keep track of all the minor leaguers. I know every prospect in the American League, and the guys that the Yankee gave up were not any of their elite guys. Like, they really, like, Tabata hadn't been an elite guy for like a year.
I
was watching Baseball Tonight, and I was complaining about this, and then Buster came on Baseball Tonight, and he's like, I'm getting texts from GMs and executives saying, is that all they gave up? And I was like, I told you. Meanwhile, my wife's like, can we put on Bad Banner?
The best part is the Yankees got Nady too, which I happen to like Xavier Nady. I think he's a nice little bat, and I think that they're not going anywhere.
They're going to pass us.
They're going to pass us.
I didn't even want to call Jacko this week because
he
just was so gloating and happy. Hey, let me ask you, do you think you know, Nady? They call him the X-Man. I don't know how I feel about that, a white guy being called X-Man.
Well, anyone that has an X in their name, you got to call X-Man. What else are you going to call him? Xavier?
Call him X?
What else are you going to call him? X? Just X?
Isn't Xavier McDaniel the X-Man, though?
Yeah, he is, but what else is there? You just can't call someone X.
You know, I made a strong push to call our son Xavier.
Why?
Because I wanted to call him X-Man.
Well, see, there you go.
Yeah, but he's not a professional athlete. I feel like you can steal somebody's name if they're not an athlete.
Yeah.
You can tell
how do you know?
Not an athlete.
What if he does become a professional athlete? What if he becomes a world-class ping-pong player?
I will say he really has some great hand-eye coordination so far at 8.5 months. You should see him pick up tennis balls and pretend he's going to throw them and then drop them. It's amazing. It's way ahead of the other kids.
Has he eaten his own poop yet?
No. That we haven't hit that stage yet. That's about at 1 year where the kids are like, "Hey, I'm going to dig down there."
Listen, the other thing.
Oh, you got to go.
No, I don't have to go.
No, it's 3 o'clock. Your bowels are rumbling.
Yeah, I've got to go there. I don't have to go, but I will tell you that I don't know if your little guy's done anything yet, but they sure do find themselves early.
And let's leave it at that.
Yeah.
Last thing, how are you feeling about the Pats? We haven't talked to you in the podcast since tragic events of
fantastic. Like a speed bump. That was a speed bump. Feeling really good.
17 wins, 18 wins?
Including the playoffs?
20 wins, 22 wins? What's the win
prediction? I'm thinking they might have two losses this year.
It's a pretty easy schedule, I guess.
Yeah, I'm thinking two losses. And I'm thinking maybe one, but probably two.
We didn't lose anybody.
No one. We gained. No, we didn't. Well, we lost Asante Samuel, but it sounds like he was going to get lost anyway because he got carried off the field in Philly.
Who are the starting cornerbacks?
Is that a trick question?
No, it's a legitimate question. I haven't started my research yet. I don't even know who our starting quarterbacks are.
We have like seven of them.
So it's like going to be cornerback by committee.
Yeah, and I think that the Ellis Hobbs experience could possibly, I don't know. I think maybe this is his year, and if not.
This is his year in Arena Football League?
Yeah, this is his year for the, if things don't happen, then I don't think he's going to go. I don't think he's going to be around much longer. Yeah, you've got Hobbs and you've got, who'd they pick up? Sanders or?
Have you sensed a swelling chest, collective chest with, in the city of Boston with all the success we've had or not?
It's bad.
It's bad?
Yeah. It's kind of annoying a little bit.
I have to say the bandwagon Celtic fans kind of bummed me out when I was back home. I mean, I know we all grew up with them, but the bottom line is, you know, even it just seemed a little bandwagon-y to me, the Carnett jerseys and the Allen jerseys, and it was like, where were you people 5 years ago when we needed you?
Well, I mean, where are they going to be?
No, I know. Honestly, it just kind of bummed me out a little.
Where are they going to be? I mean, it was really bad 5 years ago. So I don't blame them for it. It's kind of bad in the way of every day you're in there, people talk. I can't talk out loud right now. I'm in my office, but it's kind of annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I do feel like the one good thing that happened from the Pat Super Bowl is that it brought everybody back down a notch. And it's a level of humility that maybe would not have been there had they won.
Let me give you an example of how it's annoying. That Ray Gene Rondo guy is really good, huh, man?
Yeah, there are some indicators.
Yeah,
or Jacob Ellsbury, that's another one.
Jacob Ellsbury. Yeah, there's a bunch. So
Ucalis, they say it like Ucalis.
And for me, going to this, I've got my little package to the Sox games.
Yeah.
Sitting in the seats is just no fun.
Yeah, I get bummed out when they show the fans now.
Oh,
it's so different than when we used to go, and I don't mean to be like the old days guy, but I just can't believe the number of women and young kids. Like, you don't know if you're at a Red Sox game or it's some sort of like, you know, the Wiggles.
Well, I don't know. I also don't know if they – it just seems to me like the park got smaller due to the amount of people that are in it.
Yeah.
So it's really packed in there. I mean, really, really, really packed.
And hot.
And hot. And I'm a fat dude. I'm the guy when you're a kid and like you walk on the beach and you get the little rash between your legs. I'm that guy. Mm. So I've got my legs. I have to keep them closed. I can't do the spread thing. It's just never had those issues before.
Fenway, it's like 89. If it's 89 outside in Fenway, it's like 113.
Swampy.
Especially you get like near section 31, 32, 33, like in left field. All those seats are nice and crammed together. People got to turn to watch the game.
That's where my package is in section 12. My package.
My package. Nice.
My package is below my belt, but the ticket package is actually in section 29.
Well, we got to wrap this up. I just no, we really have to wrap it up. We're running out of tape.
All right.
To recap. Neither of us want Manny to leave.
Manny's not going anywhere.
Okay, good.
Not going anywhere.
All right, All right, thanks, bud.
Talk to you later.
Target the sun off. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.